Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome back to the History of Video Games. My name is Wes, and I'm here, as always, with the wonderful Ben. How you doing today, Ben?
I'm doing good. How are you, Wes?
I'm doing pretty great. I just, you know, shoveled my face full of cornbread, and I'm living a happy life.
All right, nice, nice.
Just in case anyone was interested, you know. But that's not really what we're here to talk about. We got to talk about some video games, right?
Oh, yeah.
You have anything you're itching to talk about?
Oh, yeah. Well, this has been a long time coming, Wes. It's something I've been talking to you about, you know, off of the podcast for a while now. Yeah. A few weeks.
Ooh, yeah. I'm excited.
I've been heavy into Fallout 4, and I finally beat it after 90 hours of playtime. I've been playing it for probably a good month now. And I've got a lot of thoughts on it, and I know that you're a big Fallout fan, so I'm hoping you can kind of answer some questions for me, because I have some things I don't really get, so I need to know what the deal is.
Yeah, yeah.
But let me talk a little bit about the game in general, and where, by the way, my background with the Fallout franchise, I think you gifted me like all of them, by the way, but I started with Fallout 3. This was a long time ago, back when I was less worried about trying to beat games. So I think I only played it for like 5 or 10 hours, and I just did not like it. I took a long time off, and then eventually came back and played Fallout New Vegas, and I really enjoyed Fallout New Vegas. I think many people have it as their favorite one, so I'm not alone there. But yeah, I really liked Fallout New Vegas. I don't know. I feel like, well, I'll compare it more to Fallout 4 in a sec. But yeah, now finally I'm getting into Fallout 4. You know, so I was kind of optimistic. I had liked the one that came out before this. There are things in Fallout 4 that I liked a lot. Things like the gun gameplay I thought was really excellent. There's a lot of variety in the weapons. I mean, I felt like I was discovering new weapons all the way till the end of the game. And they all have like modifiers on them, which can be really cool. I felt like I got a good like gear progression. Like, I never played more than 2 hours without getting a new piece of gear. And I think something else that I really liked was the inventory system itself, I thought was very fair and very lenient. You know, like in the beginning of the game, I probably had 6 or 7 weapons on me. And by the end of the game, probably 12 to 13 weapons.
Yeah.
And things like ammo have no weight. Things like stim packs have no weight. So you can just loot as much as of it as you want without any restrictions. And in general, you know, the weight limit, you know, problem that I have with games a lot, like looking at you, Skyrim, wasn't an issue. So that made the gameplay a lot more fun. And at the end of the day, Fallout 4, it's like 75% scavenging, I feel like, and 25% gun gameplay. And I thought both were really good. So, you know, the moment-to-moment gameplay was great. The issues I have with the game are more from a narrative point of view. Also from a bugginess point of view. I mean, I know Bethesda games are known for being buggy. This was bad, though. I don't know what your experience was like when you played it, but I probably couldn't go more than 5 to 10 minutes without encountering a bug. I mean, it was really bad. I had probably 2 crashes, which over the course of 90 hours is not bad. So it wasn't crashes, but it was stuff like getting stuck in the terrain, having the NPCs, their AI would bug out, and they would just stand looking at the wall, you know what I mean, in a gunfight. I had one boss battle, actually, where the boss, I don't know what happened. Essentially, I was like in a corridor shooting into a room. And I was shooting the boss, and the boss ran away from me into the corner of the room and then just stood there. And I was like, what is happening? So that happened a lot. I fell through the world a lot. I had to use the console commands a lot. One of the quests, or I actually had 2 quests bug out on me. One left a piece of inventory in my backpack that was 10 pounds heavy, and I could not remove it because it was an essential item, even though the quest was over. Which was a bug. And then another one, I killed somebody and it didn't recognize that I killed them. And I had to use console commands to go past it. So that was bad. But then from a narrative point of view, let's start with the big picture. I don't know that I really understand the world of Fallout very well. Maybe you can talk to more this a little bit more.
Well, yeah.
But on one hand, you've got the most technology heavy weapons that aren't in real life. You know, they're sci-fi. But then on the other hand, you have the vast, vast, vast majority of the game being taken place in what is essentially ruins and dumps. And there's seemingly no in between.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it feels like I'll walk into like an NPC's house, like just some random NPC, and they'll be like, you know, their room is just a sleeping bag and there's a hole in the wall where they're sleeping. And I'm like, wouldn't you patch the hole? Like, this feels like, I don't know. I know it's supposed to be a little bit of an active war zone or something, but it just, like, the whole game is just like rusted metal and rotting wood.
Yeah.
And that is what the game is. And I'm like, I don't know. I just feel like even after a nuclear apocalypse, people would like not sleep in a landfill. They'd like clean up some rubble in their bedroom. Like, you know, you walk into a bedroom, there's like rubble and trash on the ground. I don't know. Like, I don't really get it too much.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I feel like that's something with the aesthetic of the games that like there isn't really an in between. There is the hyper technological people, almost all of the factions that have that hoard all of it for themselves and do not want any of it in the hand of the general masses. So that part I get, but I'll agree with you that, like, you know, people should, they might actually start fixing up homes and stuff just to live. But
yeah, I mean, the enemies have laser weapons, so I think they can like get concrete made. I don't know. Obviously, I felt the world in general was just very bleak and devoid of any color or anything all that interesting. I mean, I can't tell you how many fish packing plants I walked into and they all look exactly the same. And just, I guess, probably use the same assets, but same colors. And I don't know. It's just, there were times like I would explore something in the world and there'd be nothing there that I found. And I go to the wiki to see if I missed anything. And the list of bugs related to that location is larger than the list of loot that is at that location. I'm like, this doesn't feel right. So yeah, I don't know that I'm really into the world that much. It's very different from Fallout New Vegas. I feel like Fallout New Vegas had a like a noir kind of vibe that I really liked. It's like gangsters and people in suits and like rusted down saloons and Wild West kind of things going on. And maybe it just made more sense to me in that context.
But yeah.
Massachusetts, which is where Fallout 4 is based, is just not that interesting. Like, I don't know. Like, the Minutemen is not a faction that's, like, interesting to me. So,
yeah.
I mean, I like them from a narrative point of view. But, I mean, as far as, like, vibe, you know, it's just, like, kind of lame. So, I don't know. I wasn't really into the world, I guess. And then, digging into the narrative a little bit more, there's like no animations for anything related to the narrative in this game. Like, I had a quest where I brought like a little kid home to his parents who was lost. And you complete that quest and they're like, oh, Jimmy, you're home. I missed you so much. And it's like really well done voice acting that's like really emotional. And then you just watch the screen and the NPC just has that blank stare on their face,
right,
and they're
right.
Not moving. They're just idle animation as they're giving this exposition. And like, couldn't you have like programmed a hugger or something? And like, I don't know, it's just so totally devoid of like emotion whenever you talk to anybody. That took me out of it a lot. And, you know, I don't know if I should get into spoilers necessarily, but I did not like the end of this.
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple endings. I think there's four, but yeah.
I mean, I say end, I mean, there's like a plot twist that happens. I don't know if we should spoil it or not.
No, I mean, it's a 10-year-old game, but I think we can, just in case people play it, but I'll agree with you. I think the story of Fallout 4, the main story, is one of its weak points.
Yeah.
At the very beginning of the game, this isn't spoilers at all, but basically you're a father and you go into a vault and your son is missing. And you instantly go from my son is missing to spending 50 hours frolicking in the wasteland and forgetting about your son. Like, it's just like, a Fallout game to me, doesn't work with such a story that should necessitate action. You know what I mean? Like,
I didn't mind that at all. I was kind of like, oh, a revenge tale. I'm down with that. Let's go kill some bad guys. Like, like I like that. But yeah, there's a bit of a plot twist that happens where that ends up not being your main goal anymore. And then I was like, well, what am I really doing here? I don't know. And it was weird too, like at the very, very end, right? I know you can take multiple different paths, and I liked the ramp up to the ending a lot because there's multiple factions in the game. You kind of have to choose a side and fight against the other factions. I love that part about it. But like, I remember at the end of Fallout New Vegas, there's like a slideshow ending that shows all the decisions you made, all the characters you met, what happened to them. Did you complete their stories? It was a simple ending, and I remember kind of bashing at the time because it was just a slideshow, but it was way better than whatever they did in Fallout 4, because like there was a narrative ending, but there was no recap what happened to your companions or, you know, what you did in this journey, what decisions did you make? None of that was there. It just kind of like end.
Yeah.
That was it. And I was like, you're not even going to give me a slideshow? So I don't know. Yeah. I ended up leaving the game probably with more mixed emotions and enjoyable emotions, even though I did play it a lot. And I think the moment-to-moment gameplay is very good, but it's just hampered by, I think, terrible storytelling, a location I really wasn't that into, and tons of bugs, man. Just everywhere.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I don't know, Wes.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Fallout 4 for all of its faults, but I think that's fair appraisal of it. And, you know, all this makes me think, me and you both have to try, it's an old game now, but Outer Worlds, because that is the next game that was made by the studio that developed New Vegas, because it was published by Bethesda, but developed by Obsidian Entertainment. And New Vegas was the Fallout game. I think there may have been one other like expansion or something that was developed by Obsidian, not by Bethesda. So.
Hey, I'm down.
Yeah. 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 Could get a little Fallout in space. See how it goes.
All right. Yeah. What are your thoughts, Wes? What do you remember from Fallout? Anything you want to add? I can't remember. Did you play it right when it came out? Probably.
I did.
Thing I wanted to tell you quick.
Oh, go ahead.
I was really looking forward to the base building aspect of this game because I knew it had base building. Ended up hating that.
Yeah, it's rough.
Just the controls. I think in general, the game had a 4-controller UI design, which was very noticeable. And the base building was a part of that. Like, to place a building down, it was not left click, which was confusing to me. Left click, it was rotate. Seems weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was just a little tangent.
Yeah. I think it just tried a lot of things at once, like the base building, this gigantic open world, which Fallout always had big open worlds, but it just did a lot of stuff and didn't do all of them as well as it could, I think, because it was trying to do so many things. I do still love it overall, and I like existing in that world. I mean, I love post-apocalyptic worlds, so the gray doesn't bother me too much, but yeah, I agree with a lot of stuff you're saying about it. So. Oh,
one other thing I noticed, and I don't know if this is a uniquely Fallout issue or what, but whenever you fight like a big monster or a big boss in this game, like I would just switch to a more powerful weapon and just destroy him as quickly as a normal guy, if not quicker. I don't know that that's like a good system. Like the weapons that do a lot of damage, usually their ammo is hard to find. There's mini nukes that you can fire, right? But then you just save them for the boss battle. So I had plenty of ammo for the big weapons by the end. It never felt like I had a boss battle and I was like, oh yeah, I really, you know, was very skillful in that. You know, it was more just like, oh, let me just use a bigger weapon, a bigger gun to kill it with and it's fine. I don't know.
I think that's just kind of Fallout combat in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, you know, like,
I don't remember that from New Vegas. I remember in New Vegas, the death claws being an issue and being like, I can't go to that section. There's death claws.
Yeah. I still had that in Fallout 4, but it may depend on how prepared you are, what weapons you have. But for Fallout 4, for me, is you either kill the enemy or you get instant killed. And that's kind of like, you know, it was a lot of reloading more than it was like a tug of war battle for me. It was just reloading saves. But
yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a mixed bag game. I'm glad you completed it and got a full 90 hours out of it. You got everything you could out of that game, I think.
I did. I pretty much I went to every location on the map, and then I cleaned out my quest journal, and except for the main quest, which I saved to the end. I'm sure I missed some side quests and I didn't do all the companion missions and stuff, but I was like, I'm good.
Yeah.
So there's still some stuff there. I didn't do any DLCs or anything, but we'll see if I come back to it. I'm open to coming back to it, but I have to really be itching for it.
Yeah. All right. Nice. Very cool.
So a big one down for me. What have you been up to, Wes? Are you still on that Witcher grind? What's going on?
I am. Not too much to talk about there, though. So I wanted to quickly talk about what I've been watching a lot of recently. There's a new game coming from From Software. I don't know if you've heard of this, Ben, but they...
Is it the Elden Ring multiplayer or whatever?
Yes, it is a weird Elden Ring branded multiplayer thing that is a standalone game and basically not related to Elden Ring at all. I feel like they're kind of cashing in on the Elden Ring fame and they're reusing all the assets, which I don't mind at all. Like, all the assets are great, so I think they should use them all, but I feel like that's the only reason that it's called Elden Ring Nightreign.
Yeah.
But it's a three-player co-op roguelike survival's not the right word, but like roguelike kind of game. You hop into basically a small version of the Elden Ring world that's randomized each match to a certain extent. Have to survive 2 days before fighting a final boss. You get items that you can like add to your character to progress out of battle. And it's just watching it is so uncanny because it looks exactly like Elden Ring. But you can like sprint incredibly fast. You don't level up stats individually. You just level up your character with like the push of a button, and you can use any weapon you come across. Basically, there's no stat requirements for weapons. So it's very bizarre because it looks just like Elden Ring, and it is Elden Ring Nightreign, but it controls so differently. The combat still seems to be, you know, pretty much the same, but you have like classes, characters basically with like abilities, you know, as if it's like Overwatch or something, like ultimates. It's such a strange meld, but I'm kind of in for it. You know, I'm definitely going to watch a lot of it. I don't have a lot of friends who like that type of game, so I don't know if I'm going to buy it, but it's interesting. Yeah, it's a weird move from Software, but I'm here for it.
Yeah, definitely could have been one of those where like, oh, I've got a great idea. How much is it going to cost? $200 million? That's too much. What if we use the same assets from Elden Ring? Oh, that's cheap. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's FromSoft. I don't think it's going to be bad. Like, it would be pretty hard to make it bad. So I could definitely see people enjoying it.
It already looks amazing from the network tests and stuff like that, despite how weird it is to me. So yeah.
Yeah.
Something to look out for. I think it's coming out in like May.
Oh, wow.
But yeah. That's all I got for now for games, but we do have a fun special topic to talk about today that we can get into.
Oh, yes.
We decided, let's check in and see what's happening with one of the co-founders of Atari, Nolan Bushnell, also known for being the owner of Chuck E. Cheese, basically, and creator of Chuck E. Cheese. So we've talked about him basically up into 1977. So we're going to cover now from like 1977 to 1983, what's going on in the world of Nolan Bushnell. So
just want to see how he's doing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He's got to be up to something crazy, right?
Yes.
And so as a recap, in 1977, he created Pizza Time Theater while he was still part of Atari and basically kind of used it to market and sell Atari arcade cabinets. Part of this apparently came from his childhood dream to work at Disney and work in animatronics, but he was never hired at Disney when he got out of college and went into video games. So he's like, hey, I'm going to make my own animatronics pizza parlor thing. So I guess that's...
What a dream.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, in 1977 or in the 70s, that's a... What else could you want? A couple years later, in 1979, Bushnell sold Atari to Warner Communications and was offered a role as a creative consultant and director of the company, but apparently it was kind of a mutual thing between Warner and Bushnell that he wasn't going to lead the company anymore. They didn't think he was good for it. But when he was offered those roles, he decided to leave the company, I think maybe around 1980. But he did something important before he left, and he negotiated that he had the sole rights for Pizza Time Theater instead of Atari. So now that was kind of his main thing. He's got Pizza Time Theater going. He continued to develop more ideas for the pizza parlor. At one point, you know, looking for a sort of mascot for it, he purchased a costume that allegedly he thought was a coyote, but turned out to be a rat. And then he dubbed it Rick Rat instead of, you know, whatever it was going to be. The idea was going to be Ricky Rat, but it was too close to Mickey Mouse, so they just called him Rick Rat as a sort of mascot of the parlor. Meanwhile, he had hired somebody named Gene Landrum, who actually worked at Atari beforehand, who was working on this presentation for the vision of what Pizza Time Theater could become, and his idea was that it would be called the Big Cheese. And apparently that,
what, that's the restaurant name?
yeah, for the pizza place, but apparently that was already taken by Marriott for a restaurant in their hotel, so it couldn't be the Big Cheese. I couldn't find much on where they came up with this name, but eventually they did settle on Chuck E. Cheese, you know, Charles Entertainment Cheese, as the name for Pizza Time Theater. So it was originally called Chuck E. Cheese's Pizza Time Theater, I think, which is a horribly long name. They said that in part, they picked the name Chuck E. Cheese because when you say it, it physically makes you smile. Because like to say E. Cheese, you have to be smiling. So that was part of the marketing of it, I guess. But into the early 80s, Bushnell also started to develop subsidiaries for Pizza Time Theater. One called Cent or Cente Technologies and another called Cadabrascope. Cente was a coin-op game business and Cadabrascope was an attempt at computer-assisted animation. Apparently, Cadabrascope was eventually sold to Lucasfilm and became the basis for Pixar. So somehow Bushnell is tangentially involved in Pixar as well.
What?
Although at that point he didn't own it. Cent Technologies would kind of end up getting Bushnell in some trouble with Atari because apparently when he left, he signed a non-competition agreement. I think basically that he wouldn't be competing with them in the same industry. So he made this new coin-op company and they sued him because of it. They eventually did settle out of court, though, and the agreement was that Atari had sole rights to make any home console releases of Cent games. Cent actually was turning a profit and was doing pretty well, but Pizza Time Theater was doing so badly that he ended up selling the company to Bally in 1983 to help keep Pizza Time Theater afloat. Just another random thing happening in these years, as well as if two subsidiaries wasn't enough. In 1981, Bushnell also created what was called the Catalyst Group, which I'm going to show my lack of understanding for how business works, but it was a venture capital company that helped fund and create other technology companies.
Okay.
You know, some of those things like went on to create important inventions today, but he's just kind of got his hands all over the place, still making coin-op games sort of through Cent Technologies, the Cadabrascope, and of course, Pizza Time, Chuck E. Cheese's Pizza Time Theater. And yeah, that's kind of what Nolan Bushnell's been up to.
I feel like Chuck E. Cheese is such like a non-serious business almost somehow. And then he's like also, yeah, I'm going to do some, private fundraising, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. Some very business heavy stuff. He's kind of, I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, maybe he's just got life. The Atari money still. I don't know. But yeah, it's... he's doing it, doing the most out there.
All right, cool. Good to check in with him. We'll have to check in with some other big names at some point, see where they're at, what they're up to. But we're going to take a short break for today, and then we will be back after a short musical break to talk about Joust and many other cool arcade games coming out in September of 1982. So we will take a short break and then talk to you guys then. Hello and welcome back. Let's hop into it with the first review today. It's the big one. It's called Joust. I feel like if you're a more old school person, you know arcade games, you've probably heard of Joust. If you're younger, like Wes and I, probably don't know about Joust. Yes. But I will say this one, I've got a bit of a special connection to, Wes, because Joust is actually my mom's favorite arcade game.
Oh, nice.
So she's been hyping this one up a lot to me.
Yeah.
And I was excited to check it out for sure. And you know what? It's pretty good. It's different. There's some weird backstory to this game. Apparently, the developer behind it is made by Williams, and the team there, they wanted to make a flying game, but not a space game. They're like, space is out, you know, but we want a flying game. And so they ended up settling on birds because birds fly, but they also wanted, like, originally you were supposed to be like on an eagle, like riding around on an eagle, but eagles don't like run when they're on the ground. So they were thinking, well, we want the character to be able to run and fly. What's more believable, a running eagle or a flying ostrich? They ended up going with the flying ostrich.
Okay.
So you're riding around on a flying ostrich, and the game's called Joust, and sure enough, you're like a little guy on an ostrich with like a jousting pole. And in the game, it's just like a straight line because there's not enough pixels to really represent anything like a spear or something. But yeah, you're jousting, I guess. But you're also flying and running around. The game's played on like platforms. Think Mario or think like
Super Smash Bros.
Yes, Super Smash Bros. Is kind of what it reminds me of. Like the different platforms that you kind of jump on. But how the jousting works, basically, you can fly around. The flying is done kind of weirdly. It's not like a space game where you can just move in any direction anytime you want. You actually have a button, which is like your wing flap. And so the faster you press that button, the more times you press it, that's how you generate the lift to kind of overcome gravity. And you have to continue to press a button to flap your wings as long as you're in the air. So that's like one of the main mechanics, you know, press the button to flap your wings. And then you have a 8-directional joystick just to move around. But there's no shooting in this game. You have to joust the opponents to destroy them. How the jousting works is that whichever character, either you or your opponent, is higher or above the other one will win the joust if you two collide. If it's exactly evenly matched, you just kind of bump away. But because you have to be above the enemies, it kind of almost feels like Mario bouncing on Goombas. Because I feel like if you're on the like the top half of a Goomba, when you touch it, you'll destroy the Goomba. Mm. That's kind of how it feels like with this game. You just kind of, you almost want to jump on the enemies. Instead of, like, I feel like in it, if you say joust to me, I'm like, oh, so you're wanting to run straight at the enemy. Not really how it works, you know? Like, feels like you kill the enemy with the feet of your bird more than your jousting weapon, which can be totally way above their body. So, and not like anywhere close to the enemy, but yet you'll kill the enemy. So it's kind of weird. I don't know that the theming makes sense, you know, all that much, but I will say riding around an ostrich looks really cool, and the enemies are riding around on vultures and they look really cool. So that's good, you know. I'm down for some really cool character designs for sure. But the game is kind of like just a deathmatch game. It's like a single screen. There is wraparound on the horizontal axis, but you've got like 3 enemies in there, I think, to start the game and need to destroy them. Once you destroy an enemy, it doesn't immediately disappear forever. The enemy actually becomes an egg, which falls to the ground. And the egg has momentum and inertia and gravity, so it can roll around pretty far. And you actually need to pick up the egg to destroy the enemy, or else the enemy will hatch from the egg. When it hatches, it doesn't have a bird yet, so you can still destroy it when it's just like on the ground as a new enemy dude character. But if that guy finds a enemy vulture who's missing a rider, then they'll come back and will be even stronger and faster. So you want to make sure you pick up those eggs before they rehatch. is a fairly minor mechanic, all things considered, but it is an extra mechanic. There is also kind of like a lava pit at the bottom of the screen. In the first few levels, there's a floor or a ceiling over top of the lava pit, so you can't fall in. But after the first few waves, the floor will actually catch fire and be destroyed, which is kind of cool. So you can fall in the lava. If the eggs or the enemies fly into the lava, they'll just die. If you fly into the lava, you'll die. But also if you fly close to the lava, a demon hand will come up from the lava and grab you.
Nice.
You have to quickly press the flap button a bunch to kind of get out of its grasp before he pulls you under the lava, which is a really cool mechanic. I love that. But that's pretty much all the game is. There's just a bunch of waves. You know, every wave there's more enemies. There is some bonus stage kind of waves where, like, you'll start a wave and there's just like 15 eggs on screen and they will hatch and become enemies, but it's a bit different from a normal wave. The game also recognizes a game kind of popularizing cooperative play, because there's a two-player part to this game. Like, at any point you can play either one or two players, and if you do play two players, it's cooperative against the enemies. And apparently this game was really helped to kind of popularize that type of arcade game. So I thought that was a nice, cool little extra there. But okay, I think we know pretty much all we need to know about Joust. Let me get into my ratings and we'll see how it actually stacks up. Was my mom correct in saying this game was amazing? I've got some thoughts. Let's start out with the graphics. It's a bit of a mixed bag to me, because on one hand, I love the character sprites and the animations. They do a couple like extra animations that just bring it up to slightly like above average for me, where like when you're on the ground, your ostrich, like the feet kind of come out a little bit more, and the running animation's like very well done. Apparently they used like biology textbooks to learn how the ostrich moves, which is interesting. But I really like your character, and the running animation's good. There's also like a Wile E. Coyote type stopping animation for if you slow down after you're running, where you kind of like slides on the ground for a while.
Nice.
Which I like a lot. So that's all good. I forgot to mention there's also in the later stages a pterodactyl which can spawn. You can't kill the pterodactyl, or you're not supposed to be able to kill the pterodactyl. I think there is some way you can kill it, but it's more there just to make things difficult, I think. But he looks great as well. I think the enemies look great. I think the platforms look really good. They're kind of made out of like maybe four colors, so they have a little bit of shading to them and depth. There's also a really cool animation whenever you die and come back as a new life. You kind of like beam into the platform, which is cool. It'll definitely very sci-fi there. And the lava's cool. The hand coming out of the lava is really cool. So I love everything that's on display on the screen. The problem I have with it is that most of the screen is a black background with nothing there. And as you play the game more and more, I mentioned at the bottom, like some of the platforms catch on fire and go away. Well, if you continue playing the game and going and doing, you know, better and better and better, more of the platforms disappear, and it just looks worse and worse and worse the more you play the game, because it just becomes just black background. So, I don't know. Is the ostrich enough to really sell this game enough for me to say that the black background is okay? I don't think so. I mean, the characters are pretty small on screen, and that gives them a lot of freedom to move around. It makes the screen feel big, but also means that there's just not that much to look at. So I didn't think it was terrible. I give it a 3.25 out of 10 for the graphics. But, you know, maybe hyped up a little bit more than it really was. For the gameplay, I want to do that one next. I like the gameplay a lot. I gave it a 3.5 out of 10. There is a certain character to this game that we don't see very much. I mean, it's kind of platforming, but it's also action combat, which is a combination that we don't see. Usually the platforming games are very like mechanical feeling. Like, I feel like Donkey Kong, when you jump, he's stuck in that air in a certain animation. There's no like real momentum and inertia like there's in this game. this game has some mechanics that are definitely taken from Defender, where the ship in Defender has this inertia and momentum to it, and that's carried in onto this game. And your character can speed up really quickly, and I actually found the character pretty hard to move because it felt like, you know, you're kind of moving slowly, then beam across the screen really fast. So the inertia, you know, it's not quite as stable as games today, but you can still really move fast in this game, and that playing with that is really fun. So especially playing with it in a game that's not a space game and not a shooting game, there's no shooting. So it really is a kind of breath of fresh air when it comes to the gameplay. Obviously, it is very fun. It wasn't that hard, which was really nice. Part of the reason is they give you, I think, 5 lives instead of the normal 3. So you just get more time to play the game, so it's more fun. I got several rounds in, maybe the 3rd or 4th round before I lost my lives. So you can definitely do well in this game, and that just makes it more enjoyable. So I definitely like a lot. There were some very weird things. I mentioned the momentum kind of swinging too heavily sometimes. There were other times where there was this one time, I swear, one of the enemies glitched through one of the platforms. And I have read some things that there are weird bugs in this game. Like, you can kill the pterodactyl even though you're not supposed to be able to kill it. I don't know. It felt a little buggy and a little unresponsive. There would be times when my character felt like it was clinging to the platforms in an unnatural way, where it was like, it thought I was going to like hit a corner of the platform, and I, even though I hadn't hit it yet, it just like did it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like the platforming was sticky sometimes in a not natural way. So there was definitely some issues with it, but overall I thought it was pretty good. It is kind of repetitive. So I didn't go all that high. It probably would be more fun with a second player, which I didn't do, but I still gave it a 3.5 out of 10 because I thought it was fun. For sound, man, this is bad. There's no music in this game. There's just normal sound effects, and some of them I like a lot. Other ones feel like they're very out of place. I know for a fact from interviews and stuff that there are, some of the sound effects are shared from Defender, which, this isn't a space game. I don't know that it makes a lot of sense to have those sounds in here. There are some other sounds I kind of like the screeching of your bird when he kind of does that stopping motion and he slides on the ground. It's kind of cool. I like the flapping noises, but it's just kind of boring to listen to. There's not a whole lot going on. So with no music at all, I just could not go high. I only went 2.5 out of 10 for the sound effects for this. For relevance, I went fairly high, 7.5 out of 10. This did sell very well and was very popular at the time. The game's also very unique and apparently has inspired many games in the future. I don't want to go through them all because I want to save some for surprises. But yeah, I mean, it's like an action platforming game, which we don't see. You know, we either see action games or platforming, like shoot 'em ups or like jumping over barrels. That's pretty much it. This was truly an action platformer along the lines of something like Super Smash almost. So definitely have to give it some credit. I don't think it like influenced Super Smash, but you know, I thought it was pretty relevant. So I gave it 7.5 out of 10. Overall, that leaves me with a 3 out of 10. The sound brings it down a lot. I mean, even if the sound was better, I think the game is adequate for its time. I don't think it's that good, really. You know, I felt the movement was a little glitchy. I said before, I kind of was sticking to walls weirdly. People were glitching through the ground. That's your main mechanic. You know, the jousting is weird because you're not hitting people straight on. You're hitting them from the top, which is not where you aim your joust rod. I don't know. So there's just some weird stuff going on. I kind of like the ostrich and the character design's great. I like the flapping mechanic. That was one of the big things. Apparently when they sold the game, they weren't sure people were going to like that and ended up being a big hit. I do think that's a really cool mechanic. I'll also say the arcade cabinet looks pretty cool from this. I think it's one of the better marquees that I've seen, which is like kind of at the top of the arcade cabinet. It's just like people riding vultures with spears, you know, set to a backdrop of lava and fire. It's
heck
like,
yeah.
Cool. So there's definitely some things to like in here, but I don't think it's going to make my top games of the year. I'm sorry, Mom.
Oof. Oh, man. Well, you got to be the one to break the news to her, but
yeah, I will.
Cool. All right. It's interesting, though. I mean, the theming and the just the idea of ostrich jousting alone, I feel like is pretty sweet, but
yeah.
Yeah. Popular at the time, but when you look at it maybe from a less biased perspective, it's like, it had some problems.
Yeah. nothing that can't get overcome, though.
Yes,
I think there is a sequel that will come out, so who knows?
Oh, nice. All right.
All right, but let's move on, Wes. I know you've got a pretty big one here as well. I'm definitely interested in yours. I feel like it could be really, really good. Could just be okay, so I'm interested to see what you think.
Yeah, it was pretty fun to take a look at. I mean, it's our favorite category of game, Ben, which is just like weird kind of gems that we don't have much info on with some crazy styling. This game that I reviewed is called Radical Radial, already a great name, by Nichibutsu. Came out in September, like everything we're talking about today, and we don't have much background information on this, but looking at the flyers, the character that you play as the Radical Radial is hilarious. Like, I mean, it's in the flyer, it's like this kind of cartoony version of it where it's a wheel, basically, that looks like it has Marvin the Martian's cartoon Roman helmet, if you guys remember Marvin the Martian. And gun barrel coming out of the top of his like Roman helmet. And then he also has arms with fists on it. Like, I mean, he's just ready to go. He's an angry wheel and he's ready to fight some bad guys. another fun fact about this game is that in the second part of each stage, or like the second level, I guess, there's little BitTune music playing in the background. And for whatever reason, it's I Was Made for Loving You by Kiss. Seems weird because the game literally is just about a wheel going around shooting stuff. But hey, if they want to put this in there, and I mean, I kind of doubt they got the licensing, even though Nichibutsu is a pretty good company, but it feels questionable, but very interesting. But then, yeah, other than that, not much info in the game. So I'm just going to get straight into talking about what the gameplay is. So Radical Radial is a top-down vertical scrolling game that plays similar to a game we covered a while ago or talked about a while ago called Burn and Rubber by Data East. You're basically racing up the screen as it scrolls. You can move left, right, up, or down to dodge different obstacles. And then you also have a jump button, which lets you get over rocks and other ground obstacles. While you're moving along, the first part of each stage is like alien bugs attacking you from the top of the screen in sort of a Galaxian kind of style. You shoot two bullets at the same time, and you can have, I think, three sets of bullets on screen at once. So you can shoot very fast in this, which matches the fast pace of the game. I like it a lot. But yeah, that's just, you know, there's rocks that you're jumping over. You can also dodge the rocks, but sometimes they're covering, you know, a line across the whole roadway. So you have to use the jump button to get over them. And there's not tons of enemy alien bug things, but there's, you know, a few that you have to shoot to get extra points as you're going. They don't shoot at you, but they can run into you. In the second part of each stage, you transition from like this sort of rocky road to a highway. And in the highway, there's like these weird space age looking cars. And the obstacles you have to jump over are crashed cars that are all over the highway. The other cars don't hit them. So I guess the other cars are flying. I'm not sure. But they just kind of move in like weird ways and can hit you. And if you hit any of the other cars, you die, but you can't shoot any of them. You can't shoot during the second stage. There's also ambulances that fly up from the bottom of the screen and, you know, go really fast and can hit you and kill you pretty quick. But they also can hit other cars and like bumper cars them into you sometimes, which is just kind of like random depending on where the other cars are when the ambulance comes on screen. And then you have a bonus stage after you get past the highway, which is still in the highway background area, but there's lots of, like, I don't know, what looks like piles of mud or something that you have to jump over and dodge while gathering little, like, point boxes that say, like, 100 points and stuff like that on the ground to get to the finish line. You repeat that cycle 3 times, and then, though I've never seen it except in the flyer, apparently after you go through the game 3 times, there's an additional bonus stage where it's a horizontal view instead, and it's sort of just like move the parachute as you're falling to land on the most points or something like that. But other than that, that's basically it. You're racing up the screen, shooting stuff, then dodging stuff, and jumping over stuff, which is the main thing that we don't see a lot except for in Burning Rubber by Data East. But with that being said, let me get into my ratings for Radical Radial. For graphics, I actually really liked how this looked. I gave it a 3.75 out of 10. The backgrounds are a little plain. That's the main thing I didn't like. You know, the first one is a black background with, like, I think purple dots on it to sort of make it look like dirt. But then the edges of the screen, like we see in a lot of racing games, have nice colorful detail on both sides. I couldn't tell you what the heck is going on the sides of the screens. Like, it's not like some games where it's like, oh, those are trees, those are houses, this is a city that I'm racing through. This is just like blue bubbles and abstract shapes. So not maybe as good as it could have been, but it does add a nice bit of color to the game. I also really like how your character, the Radial, looks. Since it's a top-down view, you can't really see a face or anything like in the flyer, but it's just this multicolored wheel that's mainly red with blue lines on it for the treads. There's white for little spikes coming out of the sides of it. And it also has different sprites for when you're moving left or right that are sort of angled to the side. And when you're moving left or right, there's also these little white kind of like skid marks that show up behind you. I feel like that's not something we see a lot in vertical scrolling racing games. Actually having the different side-to-side sprite is really nice. The sprite also gets larger whenever you do the jump effect, which is fun to kind of make it look like it's coming up towards the screen. The enemies in the first level are also nice and colorful, but they almost looked exactly like any other Galaxian clone bugs, so they weren't too exciting in themselves, although I do appreciate the color. But the one thing that I really loved about this game is the cars on the highway in the second part. They all sort of look like pill-shaped and kind of remind me of like Capsule Corp from Dragon Ball or like the Jetsons.
Yeah.
Like, they're basically, yeah, just like pills. They're brightly colored. They have like lots of detail on them for the windows, for like where the doors would be, stuff like that. And then almost all of them have white reflection lines on the left side of it to make it look like, you know, the sun or something is shining down on them and that they're all super sparkly. Kind of gives like that the future is chrome sort of feel to it, but they have a lot of nice colors to them. The ambience looks good too. It's just a smaller version of a car, but it has like a red blinking back to it. It almost looks like a beetle or something. So yeah, I just loved how those look. They're super imaginative, very like, I don't know, 80s, 90s view of what the future might look like. Other than that, though, I would say everything just kind of looks okay. There's rocks on the first stage that for some reason the detailing on them makes it look like there's an axe on top of it, but it's just the shading. So all of that looks all right, but overall, I just think it's a really colorful and cool aesthetic. Moving on to sounds now, I gave this a 2.75 out of 10. Unfortunately, despite the fact that there's a Kiss song in this, the sounds in Radical Radial are just kind of okay. The first stage has absolutely no music for whatever reason, and the enemies sound exactly like a typical Galaxian game. Jumping in the air has like a spacey sort of sound that I like, and I really do like the Gatling gun kind of sound for shooting, but other than that, there's just not too much going on. And then in the second stage, you can't shoot at all, so the Gatling gun sound goes away, but you do get the Kiss song that's done all right and has 2-part harmony, but it's a surprisingly short loop, and it kind of just sounds like nothing like a Kiss song. It sounds like a little kid's learning song that you'd like sing along to. It just, the way that it's done for some reason sounds so weird, because I listened to the song when Ben, you know, you told me that it had this in it, and I'm like, I don't see it, I don't know. So it didn't add the cool factor that I feel like they might have been hoping it would, but at the time I feel like that was probably such a big song you would probably instantly pick it up. But for me, I'm just like, it just sounds okay, unfortunately.
Yeah.
For gameplay, I did really have a good time with this, so I gave it a 3.25 out of 10. I feel like it takes the vertical scrolling shooter and adds that jumping obstacles element in it to mix it up. It makes it a lot of fun. It's all very fast paced, but it definitely feels beatable, and it's always great getting to mash the fire button to shoot a lot to destroy all those ships. The second stage is an interesting switch to a pure dodging game with no shooting, and that honestly was the hardest part for me. The opposing cars move in like really weird floaty ways, I guess because they're flying cars. But I thought the ambulance coming in and knocking all the other cars around was really fun, and the dodging and jumping still felt pretty solid, even if the second stage was hard. For relevance, I gave it a 5 out of 10. I don't know that we really see this sort of like top-down jumping mixed with, or I don't know that we've really seen this sort of top-down jumping mixed with shooting mechanic before. I think that Burning Rubber didn't have shooting in it. It was just jumping on top of the enemies. I don't really know how relevant that particular genre is going to be, but I do think the fact that it references a popular Kiss song gives it at least a little bit of relevance. So that's why I landed on a 5 out of 10. And overall, that left me with a 3.25 out of 10 for Radical Radial. I think it's another one of those fun little hidden gems. It's got interesting graphics, weird character to it, and a wild theme. And the gameplay's pretty fun, too. I didn't know that I needed a wheel that shoots rockets in my life, but now that I have it, that's all I ever wanted.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like this game has such a unique art style.
Yeah.
I feel like I could pick it out from a lineup of games so quick.
Yeah.
So.
And I talked about how good the wheel looks, but I forgot to mention that even just the wheel spinning animation looks good. Like it really helps add to that element of that feeling of speed that we look for in these types of games.
And very rarely do you play as a wheel in something.
Yep.
But it's pretty cool. I like it. So I'm glad you got a chance to check it out, Wes. Shooting and driving. Sign me up. But let's move on. We've got another one here already. My second review is coming at you so quick, Wes. This is also a pretty big game. It's a very well-selling game. It's called Mr. Do, which I've not really heard of before. I will say I'm almost positive that Mr. Do is like, this is by the company Universal. I think it's their way of like, oh, wow, Pac-Man's like got a lot of merchandise going on. That's a lot of money. We need to create some kind of universe, and we're going to make it around Mr. Do. So this is the beginning of, I think, 4 or 5 games that involve Mr. Do. But yeah, the first one's just called Mr. Do, and it is essentially a Dig Dug type clone. It is unique from Dig Dug. I mean, nothing's quite like Dig Dug with its like weird balloon gun thing that's got going on. But the digging aspect is similar to Dig Dug. Basically, you start on screen, there's a maze, there's monsters in the maze. Unlike Dig Dug, where the monsters are kind of like in their own little tunnel, everything starts out in a connected tunnel, so the monsters could come after you right away. There's nothing stopping them from just chasing you. But you can dig through the tunnel walls. The enemies cannot. The enemies, unlike Dig Dug again, they cannot go through the walls by themselves in this one. They have to stay with the walls that you've already dug. Inside the ground, where you know where you're digging, is a bunch of like cherries, I guess. And if you collect them all, you go on to the next stage. That's one of the ways you can win. Another way is by killing all the monsters. You have a weapon in this game. I think they call it like a super ball, but it kind of looks like a snowball to me. By the way, your character looks really weird. He's kind of got a sleeping gown outfit on. But I've also heard him be called a clown, like referenced as a clown, which he doesn't look like a clown to me. He looks like a guy in a sleeping gown. It's kind of like red with white polka dots on it, like a sleeping nightcap kind of thing. I don't know what's going on with that. But anyway, you're collecting these cherries, but you can also throw a weapon at the enemies. Whenever you attack an enemy with your weapon, it takes like a couple seconds for the weapon to recharge, so you can't just spam the enemies, but you can destroy them that way. And finally, after a certain amount of time has passed, there's a certain special up power up that you can grab in the center of the screen. If you grab that, something really weird happens where all the enemies that are currently chasing you stop and just stand still, and a bunch of new enemies spawn, including a boss type enemy, which is just boss in name. It doesn't do anything special. But I know if you kill those enemies, especially, the round will also be over and you can win the round that way. Just like in Dig Dug, there's also kind of like boulders in this game that will fall on the heads of the enemies. If you kind of dig the ground out from under them. They're actually themed as apples in this, which is weird. The apples will not hurt to the boss enemies, so I guess that's what makes them boss enemies. I will say, I was watching people play this and I played it myself. The enemy AI, if there's a boulder coming down a hallway, will run out of the hallway. I found like it was pretty hard for me to get a shot off of them with the boulder. So kudos to the AI with that. But there's one other main mechanic to this game which makes it a bit different from Dig Dug and made it a lot easier and more fun to play, in my opinion, because who likes dying in 5 seconds, which is what would have happened.
Right.
Had this not been the case. But just like in Dig Dug and with a lot of these like digging games, you're kind of digging like on a grid, right? And we've talked about before how kind of going turning on the grid corners is kind of weird and stuff. And there's a little bit of that in here, but what's kind of unique about this game is that if you dig on a grid space that is directly besides an open tunnel, they will still have a wall between them, which is a little bit different, I think, from like Dig Dug, where I think it would just become a too wide tunnel if you were digging one space beside where a tunnel already is. In this case, you'd continue digging or like right beside the tunnel, but they're not connected. And what that means is that when the enemies try to chase you, they can't just like, if they were in the hallway right beside you, they can't just immediately kill you. They have to actually find the entrance to your tunnel, even if it's only one column over. It basically means that it's a lot harder for the enemies to get you than it normally otherwise would be. And the enemies in this, I think, move the same speed as your player. So I don't think they're ever really going to be able to catch you. Or at least in the early levels. So that made it a lot easier. Basically, the only time when you're in danger is when you have to relink up with like the main tunnel because you kind of run out of places to dig. And that's where, you know, if there's an enemy right there, you could be in trouble. But when you're just digging through the normal dirt, kind of feels like you're invulnerable in some ways. Because there's no way that the enemy can kind of like shortcut in front of you, if that makes sense. So, yeah, it's a bit different. I liked it, though. It was a nice little change. But that's kind of all the game is. It's just collecting a bunch of cherries, occasionally destroying an enemy, digging through the dirt, and you just do it stage after stage after stage. Every stage, the layout is a little bit different as far as where the cherries are, where the apples are, where you start, or where the enemies start, and the path from them to you. And that's kind of it. There is a background color palette change, which is nice, but otherwise everything else is pretty much the same. So with that being said, let me get into my ratings now. Now let's start out, I think, with the graphics. I mentioned your character, who I think he kind of looks like he's in a nightgown. I like the way Mr. Dude looks. I think he's pretty cool. He definitely isn't as iconic as Pac-Man or even the guy from Dig Dug. He's not that cute, which I think is a big factor in games coming out in 1982. Like, they had to almost be cute for them to be recognizable. And I think he's somewhat cute, but he's not quite all the way there. I do like him, though. I think he's one of the best parts about the game. The enemies, on the other hand, just look like weird, like red blob monsters. I think they have guns, but they don't shoot at you. So I'm not really sure what's going on there, but they don't really look like much of anything. I think what you're picking up in the dirt is also kind of weird. It's like cherries and apples, and the apple is larger than your guy's whole sprite. So it's like, I don't know what's going on there. Am I like super small? I think the boss type characters look a little bit better. They look a little bit more dangerous, monstery, almost dinosaur-y in some ways, I think. But I think your main character is the main focal point and what I like the most. The background, luckily, is actually more than just a solid color fill for the dirt, which I like. It's like almost kind of this like lace kind of vibe, like diagonal stripes. So to kind of give like a checkerboard design almost or something like that. It's cool. It's nice. It kind of splits it into multiple colors as a background. So I like the background color palette changes, but I would say overall it's a pretty mixed bag. You know, once the dirt's destroyed, it's just black underneath, and other than your main character, there wasn't really much kind of doing it for me. So I gave it a 3.25 out of 10 for the graphics. Some things I liked, some things I didn't like. And everything is fortunately a multicolored sprite, which is great. I think we're pretty much past single color sprites now, which is
fingers crossed.
Yeah, at least on arcades. But yeah, so I was pretty happy with it. For sound, I gave that a 3.25 out of 10. I don't know what Joust was doing, but Mr. Dew was able to get music in here. And I think two voice harmony at that. So it's not like phenomenal. It's a little repetitive, a little high pitched at times. I feel like they need to get their pitches under control with some of these games. But it kind of sounds like circus music to me. I don't know, but it's not bad. It's decent. Provides a little bit of a soundtrack whenever you play. Which is good and very necessary. So I liked it for what it was. I gave it a 3.25 out of 10 for the sounds. Gameplay, I also gave that a 3.25. I think it's pretty good, not great. Reminds me of Dig Dug in some ways, reminds me of Pac-Man in some ways, but I don't think it's really as like good as either. I mentioned before, turning around the corners is a little weird at times and feels like I get stuck turning on the corners if I'm not in the right pixel location. I think the game's easy. That's something going in its favor. I was able to do pretty well in it, but yeah, it's just kind of the same thing over and over again, and it's got some weird mechanics, I guess, like having the boss characters spawn if you pick up a certain power up, but it didn't really change much, you know, in terms of the gameplay for me, so I just gave it a 3.25. It was an okay Dig Dug style game, but if it hadn't sold near as well, we probably wouldn't have been covering it, to be honest.
Right.
For relevance, I gave it a 7 out of 10. It did sell very well and was the start of a franchise, if you will, for Universal. A franchise that did fall into obscurity. So one that didn't last, but they tried. They wanted to make that money. But yeah, other than that, I don't think it's all that relevant. So overall, let me get the 3.25 out of 10. Unlike Joust, which I like the gameplay for a little bit better, I think this game's a little bit more well-rounded. It had the music, which was really necessary, important part of the game. It had some character sprites that I liked a lot, and the gameplay was, you know, Dig Dug and Pac-Man, which are two great games. So it's like, you know, can't be that bad. So it was solid, but it was also, I felt, kind of a safe game. Didn't really do anything that unique or interesting on its own. So I would say it was a little bit of a mixed bag for me, but overall, it's definitely a good game.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll have to see what Mr. Dew's next adventure is and if it's a different type of game that we're interested in taking a look at. It's funny. I was looking up stuff on it while you were talking about it, and he definitely is just like a dude in pajamas in the flyers for this one. But then in some of the marketing for this one, he's a clown. And then it looks like in the next games, he becomes a clown. I don't know when people are going to learn that, like, the clown character, except for like Ronald McDonald, it's not going to stick, man. It's not that good.
No. People don't talk about Ronald McDonald in a positive way.
So, no, like, that's true. Yeah.
If you're going to make a mascot, don't make it a clown.
Yeah.
Not unless you're like Pennywise. I think it only makes sense in that context.
Right. But as Ben mentioned, this is a popular game, so there are a lot of clones of it. We have Mr. Dew by Taito, Mr. Dew by Robert Marr, Mr. Dew by ADP, Electrocoin, EME, Yankee Dew by Universal, which seems like it was just a rebranding of their other one, and then a few others as well.
Okay, let's move on to some computer games now, Wes. We've got one, and this we had to do a bit of a correction here for this one, because we're going to be talking about Horace Goes Skiing is the next one on our honorable mention. We got this a little confused with the first game, which was Hungry Horace. I think we originally had Hungry Horace a couple episodes ago as an honorable mention, and we said it was the gameplay of Horace Goes Skiing. But Hungry Horace was just a Pac-Man clone, and we were a little confused. But the second one is called Horace Goes Skiing, and I think we already mentioned what this one is, but I'm going to re-go through it quick. In this one, Horace, which is another character that, you know, Sinclair is trying to make, or I forget who does this, Beam Software, or I think it's made by Beam Software, published under Scion and Sinclair, but it's another, like, you know, they want it to be this character that's reoccurring. But this is the second game of the series. The first game was Hungry Horace. This one's called Horace Goes Skiing. The first game was Pac-Man. In Horace Goes Skiing, however, you first have to go and buy skis, which is a Frogger-type game for, like, stage one. And then stage two is you go skiing, which is a traditional slalom dodging-type game. It plays all right. You know, it's nothing special, but it's two games in one, and it is the second game of this series, so we wanted to mention it.
All right, and then we have Parsec by Texas Instruments for the TI-99. It's going to be one of the most popular games on the TI-99. It was just a scramble-type game with digitized speech, and it did use bitmapped graphics, which actually gave it a pretty smooth frame rate.
All right, and then moving on, we've got one game here called Aztec by Datamost. Came out in 1982 for the Apple II and the Atari 8-bit. There is another version of this that comes out in, I think, 83 on the Atari 8-bit that's in color, but the 82 version was just monochrome. This is an adventure-themed platforming game where you kind of play the role of, like, an explorer. Has many different screens that connect all together to make a large environment, so it was very cool. But we decided not to cover it because it seemed a little slow with the controls. I don't know. But yeah, there's that one by Datamost. This next one's by Datasoft, and it's called Canyon Climber, which came out in 1982 for the Apple II and Atari 8-bit as well. This was another platforming game with multiple levels. It looked pretty good, so I'm thinking Mario must be right around the corner, right?
We'll see about that. All right, but the next game we have here is my second review for the day. It is a graphical text adventure. Not always what I gravitate towards, but this one we had to take a look at. It's called Mask of the Sun by Ultrasoft for the Apple II. A little background on Ultrasoft. It's a company that came about when a guy named Larry Franks, who was an employee working for a company that was producing products for Apple, decided he wanted to make adventure games. So he hired a software analyst from Boeing named Christopher Anson to head the project. And soon they had several employees and this company called Ultrasoft, which I believe still had financial backing from, I forget the name of the other company, but the company that was producing products for Apple. One of the main things they set out to do was to make tools for creating adventure games to make the whole process easier. This has already been done by a few companies that we've seen, but some still did kind of like hand code their games from scratch. The tool they made, though, is called Ultra Code, and we're probably going to see it in a couple text adventures going forward. One of the best things going for it was that it allowed the images in the game to be drawn really fast enough that there were actually simple animations in these adventure games, and they're still incredibly slow, but fast enough compared to anything we've seen before where I feel like you can confidently say that's an animation. Like, you know, before it's like, well, the scene is changing, but this is actually moving quick enough that it's pretty impressive. And because Mask of the Sun had an organized effort behind it and a whole team, there was actually a dedicated artist and a team that worked on storyboarding, so had a lot of exciting stuff going for it. Talking about the gameplay a little bit, Mask of the Sun plays like a pretty typical text adventure. It has a two-word kind of command system with verb and noun. Ultra Code did have some things like where it would emit articles like the or a so that you could kind of type it as an actual normal phrase and it would still know what you were talking about. The Blue Ranga blog, who we go to for a lot of text adventures, though, said that in practice, this didn't really make that much of a difference. It still was just kind of a two-word parser where you need to figure out what weird noun and what weird verb it's talking about to be able to solve these things. The story, though, is that you play as a character called Mac Steele, who is an Indiana Jones-style archaeologist who has to cure himself of a curse by finding the Mask of the Sun in Mexico. So he calls all his fellow professors to see if anyone knows where to find the Mask of the Sun, and meets up with a fellow archaeologist who has an assistant named Raul, who accompanies you on this adventure. You set off driving a jeep to three different ruins in whatever order you like, but there is a specific order that you have to solve the clues in. You can just start at whichever one of the three ruins that you want. And it's just traditional text adventure stuff. You have some equipment, you find items, you solve puzzles, and try to get to the end of the game. So that's the basic premise of Mask of the Sun. Let me talk about my ratings for this now. For graphics, I went pretty high for this one and gave it a 4 out of 10. One of the best things about this game, for sure, is the visuals. We've seen graphical text adventures before where the image like very slowly changes. I forget which one it was, but it ended with a sword fight with a demon or something like that, and the demon slowly came closer to you. This is much faster than what we've seen before. So, I mean, these animations look really good. It's not every single scene, and it is still, I feel like, one frame per second. But it's a great effect. I mean, it starts off with when you're driving in this jeep or when you're riding in the jeep. It's like every second it changes so that the road is turning and now the scenery is changing and there's a ruin that shows up in the background and there's trees on one side and then there's a mountain on the other side. And like, it's all slow, but the pictures are well detailed and it really, you know, helps sell that illusion of you're riding in a jeep. They use this animation at the very beginning of the game too, or the style of animation at the very beginning of the game when you get out of a plane. It kind of has your character slowly walking towards two people, and they get more and more detailed as well as the jeep that they're standing next to. There's also animation when a snake is like gearing up to attack you and skeletons as they're trying to stab you with a spear. And even one section, which is very Indiana Jones, where you walk into a room and you see a boulder perched at the top of like a ramp. And the boulder actually sways back and forth the whole time that you're on the screen, which is fantastic. So all of this just adds a lot more life to the game. Oh, and I forgot to mention one point where you put a head on a statue and it turns into a jaguar and walks away.
Nice.
Which is all just super fun. And it helps that the images are really good too. I mean, they had a dedicated artist for this. It's still, you know, whatever the Apple II can give you, but it's a lot better than what we've seen before. I mean, maybe some of the Scott Adams stuff is pretty close, but I feel like the fidelity, it's more crisp, it's more detailed. The human faces even look good and not like weird and atrocious. So it's a surprisingly great looking game, and the animations go a long way to helping with that. Moving on to sounds, I only gave this a 1.25 out of 10. But honestly, that's, or sorry, a 1.5 out of 10. But honestly, that's better than I thought for the Apple II and a text adventure. Usually we don't expect any sounds in these, but there are some pretty good ones in this. There are some beeps when you're driving just to signify like, oh, something happened, the car's stopping now and you have to go investigate. There's also a noise like falling down a pit for one section when you walk into a door and fall into a black room. And then there's also my favorite, which is the jaguar statue, where when it comes to life, it does like a roar that, you know, it still sounds weird and digital, but it honestly doesn't sound half bad at all. So tons of empty space with no sound at all. But when there are sounds, they're pretty good in this. Moving on to gameplay now, I gave this a 3 out of 10. Mask of the Sun is pretty standard text adventure fare, and the Ultrasoft Ultra Code doesn't really make the commands that much easier. But for the most part, it's logical, and the theme makes the puzzles all that much more interesting. I mean, your character has this curse that you're trying to lift, and you even get life-giving pills at the beginning of the game that kind of help you stave off the curse. So you can last for a little bit and keep going and playing the game. You have to like take them periodically. There's also this sort of like exploration to get hints for other puzzles instead of just like find an item, solve a puzzle, find an item, solve a puzzle, which is really cool. And three key items that you need to progress to the end of the game actually have a screen that pops up right when you pick them up that shows a diagram. And when you put the diagram from the three items together, it gives you a way to navigate through the classic text adventure maze where you can't see anything that happens towards the end of the game. There's even some like real-time sort of interactions in this, which is really cool. Like when the snake and the skeletons are attacking you, you have, I think, like 5 seconds maybe to type a command to shoot them or to attack them in some way before they finish their attack animation and actually hit you. And the whole time, you know, you see the animation of them getting ready to strike, and it just looks really cool and was more dynamic than I feel like we've ever seen a text adventure be. You know, you've got real-time elements mixed in there too, and a really fun story. For relevance, I give this a 7.5 out of 10. I feel like this is one step closer to a point-and-click adventure. We actually have movement in a graphical text adventure now. It's pretty awesome, and the game is popular enough, and I feel like other adventure games are gonna have to take notice of this, you know, because they're hopefully going to make some waves with this. And so overall, that left me with a 3 out of 10 for Mask of the Sun. I'm still not a huge adventure game fan, but the animation really took it to the next level and brought me into the game. I definitely need a better parser still. Like, these two-word commands that don't work very well are definitely getting annoying. Better yet, just give me an actual point-and-click interface. But overall, I think Mask of the Sun does a great job of immersing you into that world. And I think the storytelling and art quality from having a bigger team behind it is awesome, and I hope we see more of that.
All right. Nice. Yeah, I'm really hoping we get to the day where graphical text adventures become RPGs as we know them in the modern day.
Yeah. Might take a bit, but we're one step closer.
Yeah, I think we are. So definitely a good one to do. We've got a couple more, though, before we're done for today. Let's talk about another graphical text adventure. This one's a pretty big one. Scott Adams Graphic Adventure Number 5, The Count by Adventure International. This is one of Scott Adams' best adventure games. Wes, you reviewed it way back in the day when it was just text, and I think you liked it pretty well. It's even better with graphics, as you can imagine. It's probably one of the better graphical adaptations as well. I think the graphics are really well done in this one. But we just reviewed his adventure number 4, so I didn't feel the need to do this one. And I also wanted to mention Saga number 6, which is called Strange Odyssey. Also comes out in 82 after this, but we're not going to play that one. So I just wanted to mention it now while we're talking about Scott Adams' graphical adventure number 5. Both of them just came out sometime in 82. So.
All right, and then we have a game called Rocky's Boots by The Learning Company for the Apple II. It was an educational puzzle game that uses graphics to show how, like, and, or not gates work. And players need to, like, create these little contraptions by putting these programming nodes together in the right configuration. So it was this tool to help teach programming without actually doing any programming, which I feel like is still a popular theme today. And it did very well and won awards over the next couple of years. Pretty cool. And then we also have Frogger by Sierra Online for the Atari 8-bit. It was just a port of Frogger, but it looks and plays pretty well and has some pretty good music.
All right, but let's move into some Arcadia 2001 games. If you guys don't remember this console, it did release in 1982, released in May. And this is our third time talking about it. There were like 25 games at least made for the system just within the year 1982, although they were not great games. So a couple ones to quickly mention. In this set, we've got Baseball, Soccer, and Jungler. They were games that weren't great or bad, just meh kind of games. You know, things we've seen before. Mostly, I would say they're most closely associated with like Atari 2600 level games, you know, in terms of what it looks like and how it plays.
And then we have Star Chess, which was a pretty neat chess variant that adds things like teleporting units to normal chess. Nice.
Then we've got a game called Tanks a Lot, which you'd think would be a game where you play as a tank, but actually it's more like a Berserk style game where you're up against tanks, but you're like a guy in the maze Or maybe like Wizard of War would be a better description, but you're like in the maze shooting tanks.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then we have Grand Slam Tennis, which actually was a pretty good tennis game, but it was a bit slow, unfortunately.
And then finally, we've got game number 24, Spiders, which was a clone of the 1981 arcade game Spiders. This is actually the last Emerson Arcadia game ever made, although this console has been cloned by other companies, and those other companies will continue making games, like the next one you're going to talk about, Wes.
Yep, and that is Nibbleman, aka Super Gobbler, which was basically a Pac-Man game, and it came out on the Bandai, Schmid, Tunix, and MPT-03 versions of this console.
Yep, and then one more for this last one today. It's Space Squadron, which came out on the Bandai and Schmid versions of the Emerson Arcadia 2001 only. It was a Defender clone, but not one we wanted to check out. But that will do it for us today. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. We did Joust, my mom's favorite game, although I might have some words with her after this. No, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Wes, you did Radical Radial, which I liked a lot. I think I probably would have liked it more than Joust, to be honest. But yeah, it's kind of half shooting, half driving, some jumping. It was cool. And then I did Mr. Do by Universal, which was a Dig Tug imitation game. Wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. I have in my notes here, it wishes it could be Dig Tug. Rough. And then Wes, you did Mask of the Sun by Ultrasoft. Hopefully a company we'll see more of in the future, and hopefully a style of graphical text adventure that we'll see more of in the future with some animation, some movement, some life. That's what we need.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, we've covered a lot of text adventures over the years that we've been doing this, and we've got lots of information about them up on our website if you guys want to learn about them or arcade games or anything else that we've covered before. Make sure to check us out on X as well, where we post announcements about our episodes. And if you have any other questions, feel free to send us an email. And quick plug for our YouTube channel as well, where we are posting videos of some of our old episodes. And also every now and then we have a competition between me and Ben playing some old games.
Oh, yeah. Okay, but until then, we'll see you in the next one.
See you all next time.